So wait a second. You're telling me that that giant steam locomotive needs a diesel locomotive to help it? Isn't the big boy supposed to be capable of pulling a 5-mile-long train all by itself, and it's pulling, you know, a handful of passenger cars there, and why is there a diesel? What's up, guys? This is Heiss, and I've heard a lot of people ask that question, and particularly a lot of sentiment talking about how people don't like to see diesels behind steam locomotives when they're talking about big charters like things that the big boy does. Once you understand the multitude of reasons behind why the diesel is there, it's going to make a lot of sense and hopefully help answer that nagging question. I particularly noted a lot of comments about the Reading 2102 reaction video I did, where I talked about how awesome it was to see the 2102 blasting off just all by itself, and a lot of people said, oh man, it's so great to see just a steam engine and no diesel. But what the Reading and Northern does is very different to what the Union Pacific and many other excursion-type locomotives can do just based on the logistics of their railroad. The logistics of doing a big steam tour like the big boy does are kind of staggering. So much so that Ed Dickens, the guy who's in charge of the UP steam program, has to scout out and plan out every little detail that you wouldn't even imagine. There's a lot of things that you wouldn't think are issues that you could run into in a trip like this that end up being issues. For one thing, we don't have water towers all over the place anymore. Back in the steam era, there were water towers every 10, 15, 20 miles, depending on territory, depending on grade and all these different things and the size of locomotives running. And so a steam locomotive could always run and go get water. Okay, well, so the big boy's got a 20,000-gallon tender and brings a couple ox tenders full of water with it. That helps, but that doesn't ultimately solve the problem of there's only so many places you can get water. Coupled to that is there's only so many places you can get fuel. Big boy used to run burning coal, and they converted it to burn oil, which they did back in the day, and they did that with the Challengers, so no issue there. But either way, the railroad was equipped to fuel those locomotives, be it coal or oil, at the different terminuses that the locomotives would stay at. And that's just not the case anymore. Getting fuel for the locomotive isn't as simple as you just pull into the mechanical facility and fill it up. You have to coordinate getting water with the city. You have to coordinate getting fuel with a fuel truck or someone who can deliver the correct type of fuel to the locomotive and coordinate that meet. Is there a roadway next to the track that's private that Union Pacific can get access to that, you know, a bunch of rail fans won't get in the way of when they need to load fuel and all these things? Okay, that adds up a lot. So how does the diesel help with all that? Well, for portions of the trip where those distances may be a little bit longer, the diesel helps stretch the fuel and water considerably. Maybe they don't need to run the diesel for some shorter portions of the trip or where they're able to get fuel and water more easily, but for a longer portion on a bigger tour, have the diesel in notch one, notch two, couple notches up, whatever it is. And that'll help keep momentum up. The steam engine's still working, but it'll make sure that you're not using so much fuel and water through the engine that you can make it to your next refuel location. So we just don't have the logistics for a steam locomotive on the railroad anymore. Speaking of logistics on the railroad for steam engines, servicing and taking care of the engine is also something that factors into that. Ed and his team, with the UP steam team, do everything to the engine themselves. All of the rod greasing, oiling around, soft grease, you know, everything that they may run into lubricating this locomotive and taking care of it otherwise and trying to keep it looking really nice because it's ultimately a PR thing. They do that all themselves. They don't bring extra crew for it. They don't have mechanical shops all around the system that are set up to maintain and deal with a steam locomotive. All of that is gone. And so they need to make sure that they can make it to their stop locations on time for a couple reasons. A, not delaying the other trains on the system, because ultimately you don't want to be the PR guy slowing down the rest of the network. And also so that when they get to their location, they have enough time to service the locomotive before they need to move on again. There is a lot of stuff that goes into doping rods and everything, and I've put out a video about it doing it on our little K-37, a little 282 with much fewer bearings, much less complexity and everything, and it takes us a long time to service the engine. And watching Ed and his crew, I mean, they're like a NASCAR pit team, basically, just blitzing through it. It's kind of amazing to watch. But they all have to do that. So if they don't have time to do that, they don't make it in time because, okay, XYZ reason, they're not going to get to continue running. So the diesel can help keep the speeds in the right place as well, while also not using up the fuel and water. Expanding on the idea that the railroad's not set up for steam anymore, it's not that they're just not really set up for steam, they're also not really set up for the passenger cars behind the engine. It used to be that a passenger train pulled by steam would come into a terminal, offload their passengers, would go over, the cars would be inspected by carmen who know passenger cars, and all their bread and butter was passenger cars. Locomotive was inspected by locomotive machinists or boilermakers or whoever it needed to be, who know that locomotive and knew how to change all the components out on it, and there were spare parts on hand. Things as simple as brake shoes. They don't have them anymore. They don't have people who know how to change them anymore. So when you arrive at a new location, they bring the spare parts with them, what they can, and they have to deal with everything. So if you're using friction brakes on old vintage passenger cars and on a steam locomotive like the Big Boy, you're going to be wearing through brake shoes like crazy, particularly factoring in how many stops they make for the public. That's a lot of weight to hold back. I mean, Big Boy's what, like 1 million pounds or something? 600 tons? You're going to eat brake shoes, and it's not a readily made size anymore for a specific steam locomotive driver of that size and diameter and contour. They have to get them custom made, and they're not cheap, and you can only have so many. Whereas before, okay, we pulled into Evanston, Wyoming. They have brake shoes for the Big Boy on the service track, ready to go. Okay, toss the shoes on, done, changed out the ones that needed it. But now it's Ed and his team. Okay, well, we wore through a brake shoe, we have to change it, we brought the spare, there you go. So a diesel locomotive with dynamic braking eliminates a ton of headache. Being able to put the diesel in dynamic brakes means that you can slow down that whole train pretty solidly without needing to touch the air brake valves. And it's not something like, oh, Ed doesn't know how to run, or the team doesn't know how to run automatic air. Ed grew up on the Rio Grande stuff and was a real engineer on the Grand and has run the Rio Grande steam stuff that I do. All we have is ancient 6ET air brakes. So of course he knows how to run with just air brakes. It's just a fact of the operation that brake shoes are scarce, which is kind of hilarious to think about. And to even bolster that fact further, if they were to not use the dynamic braking and they had to change out brake shoes, say that they had extras and they had more spares and all that and could afford doing that and it wasn't a big deal, it's the steam crew who's doing all the maintenance on the train while it's out on tour. Imagine you're a musician, such as myself, and you're going out on tour with your band. It's one thing when you're the artist and you get to go up on stage, you play your thing, you do your 2 hours and you're done, and that's great. It's another thing when you're the artist and you're your own roadie and you've got to transport amps and drums and guitars and spend all of this time on the backside not doing the show. So the public, like they see a rock and roll musician on stage, sees the stage show, but they don't see the logistics that go into making it happen. Much like they see the Big Boy going down the railroad and everyone having a blast operating a steam locomotive on the main line, but they don't see that, okay, it's after hours, we tied up, and we, you know, something came up on the engine that we have to fix by the next day. It's the steam crew that's fixing that. If they don't get it fixed, they don't go out on time on the next day, and that's super important, and that's the whole point of this operation for Union Pacific. So they have to take care of anything that arises, which cuts into their sleep, and it turns into a kind of a grueling event when you have things like that. So the harder you're working the engine, the more braking you're doing, the more things that you end up having to take care of, the more you're cutting into any rest time that you're getting, which also is bad because that starts to play down the line of safety of, okay, well, the crew wasn't rested. Are they good to go? So you want to avoid all that stuff as much as possible. And switching from braking to talking about running the engine hard, even Ed himself said he'd love to tack on tonnage behind the thing and put on a show and make the engine work because he's as much of a steam foamer as the rest of us. That's what he loves. That's what we love. It was great getting to chat with Ed at the Great Western Steam Up a couple months back and see how passionate and interested he is in person, not just as some guy up in the cab, but he's a really genuinely cool dude. And he would love to do that too, just as much as we'd love to see it. But the logistics are, The railroad's not set up to take care of a steam engine that's working that hard anymore. Back in the day, any consumable for these locomotives was at major system shops. Or at least for most classes of steam locomotives. Big Boy, obviously, back in the day running in a narrow area of Wyoming and Utah and maybe Colorado, etc. There would only be so many parts available around the system for a Big Boy, but for steam in general, superheaters, brake shoes, drivers, all these different things, you'd have spare parts ready to go so that you're not limiting your time out on the road. Anything you can do to make the maintenance shorter, faster, easier, boom, get the train back out so we keep making money. That was important, and that's what the railroad did. So when the engine had a problem or it wore something out, it wasn't that big of a deal. You grabbed one off the storeroom or had one shipped from a storeroom in Cheyenne or wherever, put it on the engine, and there you go. Nowadays, the economy scale's gone for that stuff. There's not 25 Big Boys running and thousands of steam locomotives running. It's not, oh, okay, well, we just go to the shop and have the machinist make this part from a casting that's on the shelf, and boom, it's done. Or we have a bunch of these on the shelf and they're ready because we, you know, we could order 100 of these parts because we had 25 engines. You have one. So you can't have parts on the shelf because that's a lot of money and that's a lot of time and effort for something you don't know if it'll wear out or you don't know if it'll break or whatever, etc. like that. And so you have to deal with them as they come up. But there's less places that do casting and less places that do machining. And yes, UP can do a ton of it themselves and they've got a very impressive shop. But there's always going to be stuff that they have to make or have someone make on order, on demand, because they can't have it on the shelf. And that means that your lead time's long and your price is a lot higher to get parts. So if you're going to beat the crap out of the engine, you're going to increase the cost and time for maintenance and everything significantly, which means that it's less likely to happen. Union Pacific doesn't have to run steam. They're the only Class 1 railroad that does. No one else does. And it's really cool that they do, and I hope they continue for a very long time, because it's awesome to see these engines run. But running the engines at tonnage doesn't fit into that narrative because of how much more prohibitively expensive and how much time it is to make that happen. Another thing that's an interesting point, and this is from Ed, and a lot of these points are from Ed himself. When you're running at tonnage with an engine on the scale of the Big Boy, you gotta use a lot of sand. Steel wheel on steel rail is really low friction. And that's great when you're talking about resistance of cars behind you, but when you're talking about the locomotive, well, sometimes you need a little more traction. So we have sand in the sand domes that we could drop down in front of the drive wheels and give us more traction, a better friction coefficient. And that sand gets everywhere, particularly when you're talking about bigger drivers and something that goes, you know, 40 plus miles an hour. On our narrow gauge stuff, we're doing 10, 15. Okay, the sand doesn't necessarily get kicked up everywhere, so we have less of a problem. But with the Big Boy, it's going to fling sand everywhere. And that sand gets into your nicely brand new machined guide bars for your crossheads, your bearings, your swivel joints, your everything. And all of a sudden, you're wearing out all of your components significantly faster because you've put literal grit, literal sand into them, which helps you pull the train, but hurt your bearings. So Ed doesn't use sand when they run, or tries not to use sand, at least he says. So if you don't have to, that's a good thing. And not putting tonnage behind the engine helps with that. And the tonnage they do put behind the engine, the diesel can help with that too. And the last thing is a sign of the modern era. Positive train control, PTC. I've talked about it a little bit before in a couple of the different videos, and I really honestly should probably do a 101 video on PTC itself, but PTC is mandated to be on any locomotive that leads a train on almost every railroad of a larger scale. There's a lot of little nuanced requirements for what needs PTC and what doesn't need PTC, but anywhere Big Boy's gonna run and show off, you gotta have PTC. And that means that either the Big Boy needs PTC or it needs something with PTC that can help it function as a PTC-equipped locomotive. There's a lot of electronics that go into a positive train control system. Most of it is digital, and most of it needs very clean power. Digital electronics don't like weird wavering currents and voltages and things like that. The dynamo that a steam locomotive has, even if you added more dynamos or extra dynamos to help with this power requirement, they don't produce clean enough power because of the very nature of a dynamo and being powered by a steam turbine and the different conditions in the boiler. they don't produce clean enough power for the digital electronics to really be happy. And yes, maybe someone could come up with a really high tolerance one that does a pretty good job. Okay, but that's prohibitive and difficult. And where do you put the equipment? PTC equipment takes up a decent amount of space. You could stick it on the tender. You're still worried about the power. So maybe you could put a diesel generator in and then you could run batteries and... Or you could use the giant diesel generator in a diesel locomotive and use its batteries and use its system. Wait, that's a lot easier. Yeah, let's do that. So Big Boy has a display unit, a CDU, a cab display unit is what it's called, in the locomotive cab itself that's basically piped back via conduit and wiring to the diesel behind it. And it acts as an extension of the diesel. So the PTC, the computers, the everything that does all the math for PTC is back on the diesel. And it just acts as if there's a really, really long nose on the diesel, because the GPS antennas that say where PTC is are on the roof of the diesel over the cab. So they have to have an offset for the distance between the antenna and the coupler. So, you know, 10, 15 feet, depending on the engine or whatever. Okay. Well, what's the difference if it says 10 or 15 feet or if it says, you know, 200 feet of Big Boy and auxiliary tenders and things, and it's just a really long nose? Oh, okay, well, we tricked PTC a little bit, and that way the engine's not equipped, but the engineer and the road foreman who ride in the Big Boy can see what's going on with the CDU screen, and the engine behind it understands that there's, you know, a giant wall of thing in front of them and can adjust all braking calculations accordingly. That's a lot easier than trying to install all of that equipment onto the locomotive and finding a way to power it. It's not an impossible task, but it's a really, really, really high bar to make happen. And when you're already talking about all the logistics that we've already gone through about needing to have the diesel for everything else anyway, this is the easiest, most cost-effective, simple, and least modifications to the locomotive, so most historic way to do it. If you wanted to put the Big Boy on display, you could easily take that cab screen out and remove the conduit, and there you go. It's back to the way it was. You start hacking away, adding dynamos, piping, plumbing, valves, you know, things for all the PTC equipment on the tender. Not so much. So special thanks to Dynamo Productions for letting me use their footage of the Big Boy. I have somehow still never seen it in person myself. It's just been, you know, paths never crossed. So hopefully this year in 2023, I'll get to see it run. And again, thank you to Ed Dickens as well for providing the really thoughtful essay that spawned a lot of these points on the Union Pacific Steam fan club page on Facebook. And then as well for being a cool guy and chatting with the rest of us down at the Great Western Steam Up back in July. Anyways, guys, I hope this video is informative to you and helped paint a picture why you end up seeing a diesel locomotive behind a steam locomotive. Yeah, it's perfectly capable of running tonnage and doing all the things, and I've heard a couple clips of the Big Boy bark pretty loud, and it's pretty cool. But the reality of it is they just can't do that because of the way that running a steam locomotive on a modern railroad has to be. And that's very different when you're talking about a short line or a class 2 or class 3 railroad that wants to run steam and has the shop ready to go and is okay with and ready to do all of the big maintenance that comes with beating the crap out of one of these engines. So, thanks so much for watching, guys. I really hope you enjoyed this one. We'll catch you next time.